There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that brings you all the best bits of today's show from Sunday, October the 6th.
We're talking robots because Gitex begins robotics and automation, two of the big talking points there. New research out of Europe from Leicester's De Montfort University shows that some European workers are actually attacking robots in the workplace because they're scared they're going to steal their jobs.
Yeah, I'm just going to correct you. They've found that British workers are attacking robots. The Norwegians have given them affectionate nicknames.
Okay, fine. It's just the Brits. Mea culpa.
The report, though, so interesting. Workers standing in the way of robots, so physically stopping them from passing. Minor acts of sabotage, they're saying. And they place it firmly, actually, on the bosses for not explaining well enough why the robots are there, what they're doing, and that they're not there to take your job.
They highlight the sad case of Fabio, who is a robot installed in the Scottish supermarket chain Margiotta. But it ended in robo-tragedy for Fabio because he was relegated to just giving out samples of meat and was eventually fired for, quote, alarming the customers. Many more examples of this robophobia happening in Europe. So we're asking, how scared are you about robots stealing your jobs? And the short answer is, not very. We've given you two options on Twitter. How scared are you that robots will steal your job? A, very worried. B, not at all worried. My job is safe. 83%. That's about 4 out of 5 say, no, my job is safe. Only 17% are very, very worried. You, Brandy Scott, think we're wrong to be complacent.
I don't think anyone should be freaking out, but I think that we are wrong to think that technology isn't going to take more and more of our roles. Because I think when we say robots, we picture Fabio with his little meat samples, or we picture Sophia, the robot that's going to be in Dubai at the end of this week. Very human, you know, laughing, talking, making jokes, walking around the place, arms and legs. And we think, decades away before, you know, my company can bring 12 of them in. If you, however, just think of smarter machines, which is what robots are, we're the ones who've made them look like people because we look like people. But if you just think of cleverer machines, machines that can learn from their tasks, so AI, artificial learning, on-the-job learning, and then it becomes a lot more real if you think of blinking boxes like the type that actually run the studio. And I might point out that the temperature that we sit in this studio is a little bit chilly, and it's a little bit chilly because we're keeping all the servers cool. Because the company likes the robots more than it likes us. I'm just going to put that in front of you. Think about that.
We've been getting a number of opinions on this, including Professor Richard Baldwin, author of the book The Globotics Upheaval. He was in Dubai, actually. We first spoke to Professor Baldwin in March this year when he was here for the LitFest. And we've been back in touch with him. He's a professor of economics in Geneva. On the back of this new research out of Europe, or the UK and Norway, to be precise, what do we think about the fear that robots are going to take our jobs? We asked him in particular, are workers correct to have these fears that robots will take their jobs?
It's not clear how fast it will come, but it's definitely coming. And it's a new thing for many workers in the service sector because they weren't facing wage competition, and they weren't really facing competition from automation. But if I can sort of elaborate on that a little bit, I think you shouldn't think about occupations as a whole, but rather the task within jobs. And the way I like to think about it is the way that tractors changed the nature of farming, with tractors being a form of automation. But they didn't really eliminate the whole occupation of farming, but it did mean we needed fewer farmers. And I think in the same way, the automation of office procedures using things like robotic process automation and virtual assistants and things like that, that will change the way a lot of jobs are and mean that some of the things we're doing now can be done with fewer workers. So in that sense, I think it's quite clear that the workplace automation will change the nature of many, many of our jobs.
Yeah, fewer workers and just easier workers. I mean, I joke about the temperature here, but here it's not that bad. But here's the thing. The servers don't need to take holidays. They're not coming in and saying, my mum's over from the UK on Sunday. Can I take Sunday off? Do you mind? Do you know what I mean? You're not getting a dodgy phone call at midnight saying, I think I've got food poisoning. The servers are just easier.
More reliable.
Probably cheaper in the long run.
Less temperamental.
Don't need coffee. Exactly. We could go on.
Anjana's been in touch. Lots of people have been in touch. But Anjana says we need to find a way to embrace the technology.
I'm actually not worried because I'm working in a company which is, I'm looking after an area called digital assurance services, which is trying to see how best we could make our lives easier.
Make our lives easier in digital assurance, she says. So yes, there are some downsides, but look at the positives. One idea that we had earlier on today, no name on this one, robots should be taxed as per Bill Gates. Well, this is Bill Gates speaking to Quartz, explaining why robots that take jobs away from people shouldn't get a free pass when it comes to income tax.
Worker does, you know, $50,000 worth of work in a factory, that income is taxed. If the robot comes in to do the same thing, you'd think that we'd tax the robot at a similar level. What the world wants is to take this opportunity to make all the goods and services we have today and free up labor, let us do a better job of reaching out to the elderly, having smaller class size, helping kids with special needs. You know, all of those are things where human empathy and understanding are still very, very unique, and we still deal with an immense shortage of people to help out there.
How worried should we be, really? We've been asking a headhunter this morning, a man on the coalface of putting people into jobs, Trevor Murphy, the chief executive officer of Cooper Fitch, how nervous we really should be about our jobs, or even just part of our jobs, being replaced by machines.
When you've got organisations like Oxford Economics, McKinsey bringing out reports saying that up to 20 million jobs could be lost by 2030. McKinsey in the report said that 78% of physical work is predictable work and can be replaced by machine learning and robots. Those headlines, the rise of robots, are making people nervous. I think the reality is slightly different. I think there are significant upsides with automating processes. Countries that have automated economically are in a much better position now. So in 2011 to 2016, China increased robotic usage in automotive and manufacturing industry by 199%. And in non-automotive or in non-manufacturing sectors increased by 257% and are in a much better economic position for the last decade than most other countries around the world. So there's upsides.
Harmonies.
Race you for it. Trevor Murphy, Chief Executive Officer of Cooper Fitch.
This is The Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
Some big numbers out this weekend, really eagerly awaited job numbers in the US. Everyone was watching them. There was probably as much analysis before the numbers were released as afterwards. We're going to find out why they're so important now with Emirates NBD economist Khatija Haque. Khatija, thanks for joining us. Why was everyone waiting for this set of numbers?
Because it is a very big input into the Fed's interest rate decision making. So if we look at what the Federal Reserve is worried about, their mandate is employment and price stability. So for the jobs numbers, that's obviously a big input or indicator on what's going on in the job market. And so if it was particularly weak or signaled a sharp decline in the number of jobs being created, then that is another reason for the Federal Reserve to potentially cut rates. We've already had quite poor data on the manufacturing side earlier this month. And so already the market was a little bit nervous about where the US economy was heading and what interest rates would be doing. And this was, I guess, a really big component of that decision-making that the Federal Reserve will have to do at the next meeting.
So how does one actually read jobs data? Because there's always a bunch of numbers, isn't there? There's what's happening to the wages, what's happening to the unemployment, but how many jobs were actually created? What bit do we need to watch?
We kind of need to watch all of it because the unemployment rate, I suppose, is what's most relevant for the Federal Reserve. And that actually fell to a 50-year low. So that suggests that there's actually no problem in the jobs market in the US. But when you look at the actual number of non-farm jobs that were created, that rate of job growth has slowed quite sharply in recent months. So in September, we had only 136,000 jobs being created. The expectation was for 145,000. So already fewer jobs were created than the market was expecting. And we also had a sharp slowdown in wage growth. Now, that's important because consumption is around 70% of US GDP. Consumers are a very big engine of growth, probably the most important engine of growth for the US economy. If jobs are slowing, if wages are slowing, then consumers are likely to start cutting back if they start to get worried about their own employment prospects. And so that will have a negative impact on US economic growth. And then again, the implications for interest rates are very, very important.
So what are the implications here? Because we know that Jay Powell, the Fed chairman, was speaking on Friday. What hints has he given us of what could happen to interest rates and therefore our mortgages?
So he's basically said, yes, there are risks to growth, but the US economy fundamentally is still in a good place. And I think the point that he's trying to make is that you can't have 250,000, 300,000 new jobs created every single month indefinitely. At some point, the rate of job growth is going to slow because you're at full employment. And so that doesn't mean necessarily that there's a recession imminent. It just means that the rate of growth in jobs is slowing. So he's recognized that there are significant risks being posed to the US economy and that clearly the Fed will have to keep an eye on that. But just having a weaker than expected jobs number doesn't automatically mean that interest rates are going to come down in October. Having said that, the market is pricing in a rate cut before the end of the year. Whether it happens in October or whether it happens in December, that is what the market is looking for at this point. And we will get more clues from the Federal Reserve later this week because the minutes from their last meeting are due to be released on Wednesday. And Jay Powell and a number of other FOMC members are also scheduled to be speaking this week. So those remarks are going to be incredibly closely watched to see what they're trying to signal.
And we don't just have US jobs data to get our teeth into, though, do we? Because very quietly, the central bank released some UAE jobs numbers. Not quite enough to escape your attention, though, Khatija. You spotted them.
I did. And we've written up some analysis on what it all means. Effectively, the central bank is being given data by the Ministry of Human Resources and Amortization, and that relates to the number of jobs in the private sector quarter to quarter and the number of new work permits and also some data about salaries. And that's shown some very, very interesting trends. Excuse me. The first thing to note is that in the fourth quarter of last year, there was an actual decline in the number of private sector jobs in the UAE. However, Q1 of this year saw sort of a marginal growth, and we saw a little bit more growth in Q2. When I say a little more, it was basically up 1% year on year. So certainly nothing to shout about, but also not a contraction. What's interesting in the detail of that is that most of the job growth was happening in the blue collar sector. So if you look at the number of work permits that were issued for professionals and for technical staff, those actually declined year on year. So that tells us, and it's actually consistent with what we are hearing anecdotally from companies in the country, is that, yes, there is job growth, but it's happening generally at a lower level of skill than might have been the case a few years ago. And then the third point to note, which is, I think, very, very important as well from a UAE consumption perspective, is that job salaries, the average salaries across all segments of the job market have declined year on year. So even if you are finding employment, you are going to be making less than somebody doing that job a couple of years ago. And the reason that's important, again, consumption is a very, very big driver of non-oil sector activity in the UAE. So if you have headwinds to consumption, whether it's in the form of slower job growth or lower wages, then clearly that boost to growth is not going to be there in the way that you might want to see it.
Khatija, quick word on one of our top stories this morning, which is some good economic news out of Dubai. Non-oil trade increasing by 5% in the first half of this year to $676 billion, which is a decent figure. But there are significant challenges at the moment, aren't there? You've got Sultan bin Salim is quoted in the report as saying, these are challenging times with the global trade war. So how has Dubai managed to buck that trend?
Well, I haven't seen the breakdown of where the growth in trade has come from, but I would imagine that if you consider the fact that gold prices, for example, have gone up, the value of gold exports would have increased commensurately. So it's not necessarily reflecting an increase in the volume of trade, but perhaps just the value of certain components that Dubai imports and exports. But I do think that when you compare last year, we already were in a fairly weak position. So it's possible that you're seeing some growth off a low base. But certainly looking ahead, the global data suggests that the volume of global trade is declining. And so, you know, you would expect that to present quite a challenge for Dubai as a trade hub, because ultimately it's not just the value of what you're importing and exporting, it's the amount of it that matters in terms of job creation and growth in the sector, because real GDP is measuring volume, it's not measuring prices.
And the head of MENA Research for Emirates MBD, the economist Khatija Haque, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
This is The Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter. Newsmakers.
The people making the headlines today.
Starting with PayPal, let's get a bit more insight on that big PayPal story, because it's a big deal for Facebook, wasn't it, when they launched Project Libra, and they made great play of the fact that it's not a Facebook initiative, it's more than that, it's about other companies, and one of the biggies has just pulled out, Brandy.
It's just pulled out just before it's had to sign its membership declaration, at which point it would pretty much be on the hook for $10 million, because all 27 backers of Libra, the cryptocurrency, have all made a non-binding pledge that they will invest at least $10 million. And tomorrow is the day that they're supposed to be signing a membership declaration. So PayPal, before they obviously get to the point that they're signing their life away, as my mother would say, have pulled out of the project. Now, there is so much controversy around Libra at the moment. It has attracted a huge amount of regulatory scrutiny, and the FT has been, you know, sort of hinting for the last couple of days that there had been dissent amongst the ranks, that some of the companies involved weren't entirely comfortable with all of that. On Thursday they were sort of reporting the PayPal rumours. Let's get an idea of some of the scrutiny that Libra is coming under. We're going to hear now from David Marcus. He's the head of that project, the head of Calibra at Facebook. He here is explaining why you don't have to worry about Facebook, huge, massive giant, being involved in a currency. And then he's grilled by the US Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio. This is a taste of what Facebook's facing at the moment.
The reason we designed Libra in such a way that Facebook will only be one among 100 different members of the Libra Association and will have no special privilege means that you will not have to trust Facebook.
Well, but Mr. Marcus, you know better than that. You know that only Facebook has access to 2 billion people. And to say that you are just one of many is simply not true. After people's data and private messages have been stolen and sold, after you've let Russian bots try to throw the 2016 election with no contrition, I might add, after you've abetted genocide in foreign countries, you really think people should trust you with their bank accounts in our economy? I just think that's delusional.
So that's just a taste of what Facebook has been facing. And PayPal has gone. Interestingly, David Marcus, the guy whose voice you heard there at the beginning, head of the Libra project at Facebook, was previously PayPal's president, which makes this blow possibly a little more bitter. PayPal have put out a very nice statement saying that, you know what, we just need to focus on our existing mission and our business priorities. You know, we're still big fans of Libra's aspirations and we might work together in future, da 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 da. Libra's thrown out a slightly more shade throwing statement, I would say, saying that we recognise that change is hard, and talks about everyone having to make its own assessment of risks and rewards to being committed to see through the change that Libra promises, which I kind of take to mean, we're the future, are you hard enough?
Well, they may not be the only one pulling out. This is the headline on CNBC. PayPal withdraws from Facebook's Libra network, but Visa and MasterCard still in question. We're going to find out more tomorrow on that. Staying with tech, Brandy Scott, Airbnb diversifying.
Oh, do you know what? My absolute favourite story this morning. So good, I thought it was a parody. Airbnb is going into animals.
This is Hamish. He's a bit more brave.
Getting to know you. Getting to know all about you.
There's been so much talk about Airbnb as a threat to the hotel industry and how Airbnb's innovations. Brian Chesky on Twitter asking people like me, actually, because I got involved, you know, what do you want to see us do next? And people suggesting that they wanted loyalty schemes and gyms and all the things that would basically make Airbnb more of a hotel chain. Instead, they have brought out Airbnb animals.
I'm still not 100% convinced you're not making this up.
It's too good. It's just too good. There are now chances to interact with 300 different species of animals. Yoga with goats, paddleboarding with a corgi in Florida called Mr. Beaches. You can go paddleboarding with him around the famous Las Olas canals. He'll sit on the paddleboard with you. He wears a little life vest. He's really, really cute. Hamish, at the beginning of that little ad there from Airbnb, is actually a naughty sheep in Loch Lomond. You can have a tea party with him and he'll clean up the cakes that you don't eat. If you have a pop onto the Airbnb site this morning, it's very professionally done. They have found a load of animal experiences that all meet World Animal Protection guidelines, including this one.
When I was young, I saw marine life in theme parks in captivity. Now I recognise how harmful it is for them. We do things a little differently here. We put humans in cages, sharks swim free, and the humans are here to entertain the sharks. We put speakers underwater, we crank the amp up, and we play rock music. The vibration goes out and brings the sharks in from great distances, and everybody has a great day. I wanna rock and roll. Do something totally crazy and it's going to be absolutely epic.
That is Matt. He runs shark tours off the coast in Port Lincoln, South Australia. And what he talked about there that he's going to do that's totally crazy is they're going to bring the rock band Kiss, put him on the top of Matt's boat, because apparently, as he was saying there, sharks are really, really attractive to the heavy bass of rock music. And you can buy a ticket for 42 quid. So what's that in dirhams at the moment, roughly?
100-ish.
That will get you on this boat. Kiss will play at the top. You'll be downstairs looking through the glass panels at the sharks that it will attract. They're doing that mid-November with Airbnb.
This is the Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
GITEX, the annual technology exhibition, who better to put it in some context than the regional boss of the world's biggest tech company, Microsoft. Saeed Hashish is the general manager for the UAE side. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about jobs. Our talking point this morning is about robots destroying jobs. New research out of Europe from De Montfort University suggests that some workers in Europe are actually attacking the robots because they're so concerned that the robots will steal their jobs. However, you say, and I read a piece that you wrote in one of the newspapers a couple of days ago, that actually cloud computing and artificial intelligence can create jobs here in the Middle East and North Africa. So let's start with your positive take on this. How can these things create jobs?
Okay, so I think throughout history, we've seen with every technological advancement, there was a movement in the job markets. New skills needed to be built. Some jobs will be impacted, but then overall, more jobs were created. And I can give some examples there as well. But from an AI and cloud in general, I think there was a recent study by IDC that have showed, for example, for the Microsoft data center regions that we launched here in the UAE 3-4 months ago, 55,000 new jobs related to the cloud will be created by the year 2022 in the UAE.
In the UAE alone?
In the UAE alone. And there's another equally interesting study by the World Bank that shows that for every technology job created, 4 other jobs, non-tech jobs, are created. So if you do the math there, you would be as optimistic as I am.
What about the pessimistic view, this concern that robots will destroy our jobs? Because you said, paraphrasing, but yeah, there will be some winners and some losers.
Yes. This is also very true because, and I think as some of your previous guests were also talking about, some of the more repetitive tasks that humans do today, we don't need to do. Those jobs will be taken over by robots. But then this will free up time for humans to do more valuable jobs for their time. And Okay, I can give an example. It will take probably a minute, but I think during the late 1800s and the 1900s, the equine industry was core to the economy in almost any part of the world. 1 in 5 jobs, I think, in the US were related to either raising horses, feeding horses, or driving carriages, and so on and so forth. And they were integral part of movement of goods, of transportation, of mail, of defense, of anything, you name it. With the rise of the auto industry, people felt the same because 1 of 5 jobs were disappearing. But what has actually happened is that the auto industry has grown a lot, created more jobs, but indirectly other areas that people don't think about. With the auto industry creation, people needed to buy cars. They didn't have the amount of money to buy a car compared to a horse. There was the rise of microfinancing, of banking. When you travel at 50 miles per hour on a road, you needed another brand identity for companies because people cannot stop and read. So there was the rise of marketing and logos of companies. So other industries that one wouldn't think about it, you know, at face value, were actually being created, and more jobs were being created, not just around the auto.
So how are we going to see this all reflected in JETEX this year? Kicks off this morning. Are you expecting the big focus from companies there to be on automation, to be on machine learning and AI?
Yeah, I think the journey that started a few years ago, we're just scratching the surface when we come to the use cases of artificial intelligence, of IoT, of machine learning. Again, we've launched 3-4 months ago, our data centers will be showcasing in JITEX some of the success stories that customers have had, but we'll be also bringing our experts to help customers understand how they can move to the cloud, but equally important, what they need to do on skills, so that we don't have the challenges of people feeling that they're not properly skilled to do the jobs that are being expected of them now.
One of the things that's been making headlines for Microsoft over the past 48, 72 hours has been the Duo Surface. Some people calling it a phone, some people calling it a tablet. But Microsoft, of course, famously exited the mobile phone, the smartphone business a couple of years ago. Is this Microsoft back in the phone business? It's an Android device. I know we're not going to see it at JITEX this year. It's not out till December 2020. But what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, look, I think the timing of this announcement make my job really, really hard because I can imagine only the interest of this announcement just before JITEX. But as you've seen in the announcement, we've announced a whole set of new innovation when it comes to hardware, including the Duo phone that will also run Android, and is something that we're very excited about. We can't wait until it's available. It still will take a few months, probably by the holiday season of 2020. And once it's available, it will be also here in the UAE.
Is it going to be a bit of a pivot of Microsoft back into the mobile phone space?
It's not just the mobile phone, it's back into the mobility and productivity and what we do to increase productivity of people and especially businesses.
One analyst described it as the tip of the spear for Microsoft's push into more and more products. We think of Microsoft as being a software company or data centers in the cloud, but you produce the Surface range of tablets, the Xbox games console as well. How much of your day or your time is spent up on devices or gadgets at Microsoft? My guess would be not much. It would be more about Azure and the cloud and data centers, but give me a sense.
I think it's hard to tell exactly what percentage of the day, because what we're trying to focus on is the overall experience that we're bringing to our customers. And that will include parts of everything that we do, part of the Azure cloud, part of the Office 365 Dynamics, how you bring the whole experience, whether on our devices or on partners' devices. And today we have almost every company that produces devices are partners of Microsoft.
And I remember actually when I was at the Microsoft headquarters a couple of years ago, the guys, and I think Windows phones were still around then, but they said, we're encouraged to use other devices to see how Microsoft stuff works on an Apple phone or a Google phone or whatever it may be. Listen, very quickly, before we let you go, Syed, our Twitter poll this morning is about robots stealing jobs. Of course, robotics and automation, a big theme at JITEX today. We're asking, how scared are you that robots will steal your job? How are you voting? Either very worried or not at all, my job is safe.
That's no, okay, for me, I would say not at all. But only time will tell.
And very quickly, I know you've got to focus as well as on technology. You mentioned horses earlier on today, and you're applying your artificial intelligence to horses here in the UAE at the moment. Go figure, what's that all about?
Okay, so we believe that, you know, the advancement of technology will not just help the business community, it will also help us address some of the planet's biggest challenges. Things around how do you manage the earth resources, how do you better manage stopping deforestation, how do you manage wildlife. And we're bringing a case study to show how, through artificial intelligence, we look after horses and the equine industry.
Good stuff. Syed Hashish, General Manager, UAE for Microsoft. Thanks very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed our bite-sized business breakfast podcast. There'll be another one up tomorrow.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.